So we are holding on Kuf Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, 12 lines from the top by the two dots. The line begins with Nosan. We learned in the Mishnah about various kinds of things that you're allowed and not allowed to move on Shabbos. The basic idea being, we said, so there's a certain amount of grain or other things that you might have in a storehouse that you're allowed to move on Shabbos where you need to make room for guests or for people who are going to be learning or whatever. But we said the general rule is that you're only allowed to move things that are not muktzah, things that have some kind of use on Shabbos. So we mentioned the Mishnah had said v'loyas aluf, that you're not allowed to move luf on Shabbos. We said because luf is some kind of plant. Rashi had explained that it's some kind of beans. The Rambam says it's some kind of onions. Whatever it is, they're very sharp or very, very sour, very, very sharp or bitter or sour or whatever it is. And even domestic people don't eat them unless maybe you cook them first. And even domestic animals won't eat them again without cooking. And obviously you can't do that on Shabbos and therefore they're muktzah. So we said the Mishnah had said you're not allowed to move luf, because for those reasons, because you don't have any use for it on Shabbos, but Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed it. All right, we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed it because it's food for ravens. So regular people don't have ravens as pets. Rich people do have ravens as pets, and therefore they can use luf as something that they can feed the birds. So let's talk about that. Tanan Rabbanan, metaltlan as a chotzov. You're allowed to move on Shabbos chotzov, which is a chotzov is a plant. In English, it's called squill. In particular, though, Rashi explains it's a plant. The roots of it grow straight down and very deeply into the ground. The Gemara actually mentions in Baba Basra, Rashi mentions it over here, that when Yeshua was dividing up the land among the Jewish people, we have in last week's parasha and in this week's parasha about how Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be divided up by Goral among the Shvatim, and then you have each individual person would give it, each individual family was given their portion in Eretz Yisrael. So Yeshua planted chatzavim, he planted these plants along the borders because that way the roots of them go straight down and they're very difficult to uproot from the ground, and that way it would be a permanent marker of where each person's plot of land begins and ends and where each shevet's land begins and ends. So that kind of plant, the chotzav, you're allowed to carry on Shabbos from Pesho Machol Tzvoyim because it's food, because deer eat it. Because deer eat it, and deer are common enough all over. So therefore, it's not muktzah. There's a chardol, and you're allowed to move mustard, meaning we're not talking about mustard that's already been made into mustard that we can use as a condiment like we have. We're talking about mustard seed that has yet to be ground up or whatever. So we said in the Mishnah, you can't move that. But the Braisa is saying over here, Nishu Machal Yonim, you're allowed to because it's food for doves. Now, you actually have a few different explanations among Rishonim. So how does that fit with our Mishnah, where the Tanakhama had said you're not allowed to? Reb Shimon Gamliel says you're allowed to move luf, and also Tosfos says over here chardol. Fine, but the Braisa now is going to quote Reb Shimon Gamliel, so that means evidently the Braisa here is according to the Chachamim who argue with him. So one way of understanding it is that actually the Braisa here is also according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, and then Reb Shimon Gamliel himself comes in the next part of the Braisa and clarifies and mentions another thing that he says that you're allowed to move. There's various other explanations, including one of them is that in fact there are two different sets of chachamim, one in our Mishnah who say that you can't move mustard, and another one who says that you can because you might have pet doves. And another way of explaining it is it may depend whether doves are common in that area or not, whether it's common in a particular area for people to be raising doves. Okay. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Af Metaltel and Shivrei Zchuchis. Reb Shimon Gamliel says another thing you're allowed to move on Shabbos is broken pieces of glass, Mepnesho Machol Namius, because it's food for ostriches. So ostrich, various kinds of birds, you know, birds don't have teeth. So various kinds of birds will swallow gravel or other things like that to help, and that way it'll go into their stomach and it'll help grind up their food. So ostriches are one of those birds that do that. So they'll often eat small rocks or little pieces of glass or things like that. And the idea being that the grit that way in their stomach will help them grind up and digest their food. So Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying, therefore, that glass has a use. Broken glass has a use on Shabbos, namely that an ostrich can eat it. Amalei Reb Nosson. So Reb Nosson says to Reb Shimon Gamliel, Ela Me'ata, then by that logic, if you're telling me that as long as there's some kind of creature in the world that will eat something, then it's not considered muktzah, Chavilei Zmodes Yitaltalu, then you should be allowed on Shabbos to move bundles of branches of trees, or zmodus actually usually means like branches of grapevines or whatever, mipneshu machal pilin, because it's food for elephants. And we know that branches of zmodus, we know that bundles of these branches are in fact mukta. But if you're telling me that any time you have some creature can eat it, then it's not mukta, then those shouldn't be mukta either. And yet we know that they are. The answer is, Rav Shimon Gamliel would answer, Namius shchichi, pilin lo shchichi. Ostriches are a more common creature. You have, and in various places in the world, ostriches are much more common, as opposed to elephants are not common. So yes, a person could have a pet elephant, and as we're going to talk about soon, if he has, then fine. But if he doesn't, just the fact that a person, in other words, there's two different things. There's a person could have a pet ostrich, and rich people do, and as we're going to say soon, Reb Shimon Gamliel is one of those who holds that as long as kings are able to do something, then a regular yid is also allowed to do it. So, for example, kings or other rich people may have ostriches as pets, and therefore you're allowed to, even if you don't have one, then glass would, according to him, would not be mukta. In the case of elephants, though, it's not just a matter of that rich people, that only rich people have them. It's the fact that they're hard to find in the first place in our area, in most areas where Jews live. So even Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree, therefore, that you can't move chavilei zmodus, that you can't move bundles of these branches or these branches of grapevines or whatever, because they're food for elephants, because that would only work if you actually have elephants. So Omer HaMeimer, so HaMeimer says, in the case with the glass, v'hud isle na'amius, when would you be allowed to move the glass? Only if you actually have pet ostriches. Omer Rav Ashi la'amemer, so Rav Ashi says to HaMeimer, well, how can that be? Ela de'ka'omalei Rav Nosson l'Rav Shimon Gamliel, then in that case, what about this that Rav Nosson is saying to Rav Shimon Gamliel, chavilei zmodus yitaltum v'pneisho machal apilin, he's saying you should be allowed, by your logic, you should be allowed to move bundles of branches because it's food for elephants. E isle pilin amai loy. So new, if the guy actually has a pet elephant, why shouldn't he be able to move chavilei zmodus? Ela roy, evidently, what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying is, as long as it's suitable to feed to elephants, then even if you yourself personally don't have elephants, then it's okay. Hochinami roi. So the same thing you can say now also with the glass and the ostriches, same thing. Now the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but the actual halacha is like this: if you have either that the creature that we're talking about is something that's commonly found in a certain area. And when we say commonly found, we mean that people commonly raise them, because if they're wild animals and they're not dependent on you, you're not allowed to feed them on Shabbos anyway, which is what the famous thing we have when it comes Shabbos Shira, and the minhag is to put out kasher or bread or whatever for the birds. You have to put it out before Shabbos, because you can't put it out on Shabbos, because those birds are not creatures that you're responsible for feeding. But if you have in a certain place a certain kind of animal, whether it's domestic or wild, is commonly kept, or if it's not commonly kept, but you personally keep it, either way, then you're allowed to move whatever constitutes food for it. So for example, let's say with ostriches, so if you have pet ostriches, or if you live in a place where it's common for people to have pet ostriches, in a place where it's common, where there are a lot of ostriches, and therefore people could, if they wanted, keep them as pets, then in either of those cases, you would be allowed to move glass. But if it's a place where there's not very many ostriches, and you yourself don't have one, then you're not allowed to. That's according to the Chachamim, which is the halacha. So the Gemara points out, Omer Abaya, Rav Shimon Gamliel, v'Rav Shimon, v'Rav Yishmael, v'Rav Akiva, kulu svir lohu kol Yisrael b'nei melachim. These four Tanoim all hold that all Jewish people are considered like kings, or considered like sons of kings, and therefore now everybody agrees with that basic concept, that the Jewish people are considered like princes, like sons of kings. We're Hashem's children, after all, and then Hashem is our king. But what we mean is that these four Tanoim hold of that concept also where it's relevant to halacha. That they hold that there are things that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, or in other cases, as we're going to see, where based on the concept that you're considered a ben melech, even if seemingly you're not, but they hold that you're allowed to act that way in connection with Shabbos and with other things. Namely, Reb Shimon Gamliel Hodamor, and we said what Reb Shimon Gamliel says in that connection, where he says that you're allowed to keep glass because you can feed it to ostriches. Now, even though it's only going to be rich people or princes or whatever that keep ostriches as pets, nevertheless, we see that you're allowed to, according to him, that anybody is therefore allowed to move broken glass on Shabbos because conceivably they could have ostriches as pets. Reb Shimon, where do we see Reb Shimon holds of that concept? The Tnan, we learned in a Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, in the 14th Perek, we said that we talked about over there various things that you're allowed or not allowed to do related to refuah on Shabbos. We said the general rule is you're not allowed to do things of refuah on Shabbos because the Chachamim are concerned that you may come to grind up spices for the purpose. But the rule was that you're allowed to do things for refuah where they're the normal kind of things that you might also do on weekdays. So one of them was, we said that let's say a person has pain in his hips and his waist or whatever, so he's allowed to smear regular oil on it, but not, we said, he's not allowed to smear rose oil because rose oil is very expensive. And we said, therefore, only you would only use it if you're doing it for refuah, and therefore it would be also. But we said in the Mishnah, b'nei melochim sochan agamim akaseyin shemen vered, princes, if they're injured, are allowed to smear rose oil on their injuries on Shabbos. Shekein darkon shom b'nei melochim losuch b'chol, because that's the usual way they do on weekdays as well, because they're princes, they can afford rose oil. And we said in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon oimer kol Yisrael b'nei melochim heim. Reb Shimon says all Jewish people are considered princes, and therefore the same din would apply to all Jews. So any Jew, according to him, is allowed to use rose oil. We actually said in the Gemara over there, Rav had said the halacha is that you can, but we ended up saying that the reason was not because he holds like Reb Shimon, but because in Rav's particular area, rose oil was very easily purchasable. It wasn't particularly expensive, and therefore it would be just like regular oil.
Isn't smearing one of the avmalachos that for Mishkan that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos?
No. So we've talked about that before. Smearing a thick liquid or an ointment or something is an issur of memareach. Oil is of a thin consistency. So therefore, there's no issur in smearing it. The only problem would be the issur d'rabbanan of doing medicinal things on Shabbos. Okay. Onward, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Where do we see Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva hold of this concept of Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim heim? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Hareisha hayu noshin by elef. Now we have like this as background. You borrow money, you got to pay it back. We know that, but the Torah tells us. And the Gemara talks about it in particular in Bava Metzia, that if a person owes money and he doesn't have enough to pay back, so Beis Din goes and takes things away from him and attaches various property of his to pay off the debt. But they have to leave him certain basic necessities. They have to leave. They can't, for example, leave him without clothing, without, for example, he needs tools that he uses to make a living, whatever. So they're required to leave him those. You have a similar concept, by the way. We learned in Erechin when a person makes a neder to Hekdesh, same idea. And when we have to figure out how much he can pay Hekdesh, same idea. We have to evaluate everything that he owns, but we subtract from that certain basic things that he needs to be able to live, a certain amount of food, a certain amount of clothing, the tools that he needs to work with. Anyway. So the Braisa says, Hareisha hayu noshin by elef mana. Suppose a person owed 1,000 mana to people. V'lovosh itzla bas kuf mana. Suppose that he's wearing an itzla, which is a talis or some other kind of piece of clothing that's worth 100 mana. So that talis would pay 10% of his debt. Mafshitin oiso. So the Tanakama of the Braisa says, you make him take that off and sell it for 100 mana. Or Malbishin oiso itzla royaloi. Instead, Beis Din will tell him, go buy them. Beis Din will allow him, fine, keep the amount of money that you need to buy a regular itzla, not something that's worth 100 mana. And then we'll tell you, you'll buy an itzla that's worth, let's say, 1 mana. And then the other 99 we'll use to pay off your creditors. But
this is obviously if he doesn't pay back in time.
Obviously, we're talking about when he didn't pay, right? And yeah. Beis Din is trying to figure out what he has available in order to pay his creditors, right? So they'll take that away. On the other hand, Tana Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, but Tana Mishum Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, we learned Braisis in the names of Rabbi Shmuel and in the names of Rabbi Akiva. No, Kol Yisrael Ru'uyin Lo'isa Itzla. All Jews deserve to be able to wear such a kind of Itzla, and therefore they would say, Fine, we're not going to allow him to buy one now if he doesn't have one yet. But if he already has one, they're going to say, we're going to allow him to keep it. Aye, it's worth 100 mana, and we could be using that to pay off his creditors. Basically, if he wants to sell it, gesunte heit, by all means, he should. Otherwise, you know, loiver rosh of alei shalom and all that. But Beistin, according to them, can't force him to give up that itzela and buy a cheaper one on the grounds of koi yisrael b'nei malachim heit. So we see they hold that. Now, we do have a general rule, though, that whenever the Gemara tells us something like this, this Tana and this Tana and this Tana hold of a certain concept, then it means that it's actually not the halacha. One reason is because it means, okay, those four Tanoim hold of it, but all the other Chachamim don't. Another point is also not necessarily would these four Chachamim agree with each other's opinions on these specific things either. You might have, let's say, for example, in the case of Reb Gamliel, in the case of Reb Shimon Gamliel, on the broken glass, it could be, we don't know, because the Gemara doesn't go into it, but Lav Davka, would the other three Tanoim agree with him that you're allowed to move it because of the ostriches? Because they might say, fine, but it's not common enough, even Ko Yisrael B'nei Melachim, but even among B'nei Melachim, maybe not necessarily do they raise ostriches as pets, and so forth with the other ones. So the rule is that the rule goes back to the times of the Gaonim, is Ein Halacha Keshita, when you have, the Gemara gives us a Shita like this, and this Tana, hold a certain way, then it means the Halacha is not in fact like them. Okay. Next,
So the halacha is like
the chachamim in each of these cases. So in the case of the broken glass, you're only allowed to move it if you actually have ostriches as pets, or if ostriches are very common in the area. In the case of the rose oil, you're not allowed to smear it on Shabbos unless you live in a place like where Rav lived, where rose oil is fairly commonly available. And in the case of the itzela, in the case of the person who owes the money, the basin will in fact make him sell that itzela and buy himself a cheaper one.
Even though we're all b'nei melachim,
very nice. We're all b'nei melachim, but when it comes to halacha, we don't apply that. Right. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, chavilei kash v'chavilei chula. We said in the Mishnah that bundles of straw or wood or soft branches. So we said, the Mishnah had said, im iskin l'maicho behema, if you prepared them, if you designated them before Shabbos that you're going to use them for animal food, then you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, because animal food, as we've been saying, is not mukta. If not, then not. So now, we learn in a b'raisa. It's the same thing as the Mishnah. The starts out the same as the Mishnah. Chavile kash v'chavile etzim v'chavile zirodim. These kinds of branches, imiskin and lamaicho behema, if you designated them before Shabbos that you're going to use them for maicho behema, for animal food, metalt lenoson, then you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. V'imlav ein metalt lenoson, if not, then you're not allowed to move them. Now comes the new thing in the Braisa, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, it depends, he says, chavilin anitolin biyad achas, bundles that are light enough to be carried in one hand, mutalatautlon, you're allowed to move those bundles on Shabbos, because it's not particularly a particular amount of tircha to move it. Vishteyadayim also latautlon, but if the bundle is so large that it takes two hands to carry it, then you would be also to carry it on Shabbos, not because it's muktzah per se, but because it's a tircha. It's a tircha that the Chachamim don't want you to be doing on Shabbos. Okay. Continues the Braisa. Chavile sia ezev v'kurnis, bundles of sia ezev and kurnis, which are various kinds of plants. We're going to define soon what they are. Hichnisan la'etzim, if you brought them in to your storehouse or to your house or whatever before Shabbos, intending to use them for firewood, ein mistapik man b'Shabbos, then you're not allowed to use any of them on Shabbos. Now you could conceivably, these various things, sia, ezim, and kurnis, are all usable. They're all spices. They're all herbs that you could use for spices. But if you brought them in, not intending to use them for spices, but to use them for firewood, meaning you want to dry them out and you're going to use them for firewood, then you can't change your mind on Shabbos and use them to eat or to spice your food with on Shabbos. L'maicho behema, but if you brought the bundles in to use them for animal food, mistapik behen b'Shabbos, then you are allowed to use them on Shabbos for animal food or for yourself, for that matter. V'koytim b'yad v'oichol, you're allowed to break off small pieces of it with your hand to eat them. as long as you don't break them off with a keli, because we learned earlier in the Masechta that breaking up food into small pieces is a tolda of the malacha of toichin, of grinding up. So if you cut it up with a keli, if you cut it up into small pieces with a keli, then you're definitely being over on that. Whereas when you're doing it by hand, then either there's no issue of toichin at all, or then there's no, then at least on a daraisa level, there's no issue of toichin at all, and maybe even darabanan, there's no issue.
So if we use the knife, would that be considered
a keli? A knife is a keli. So then that would so if he's going to cut off a large piece, then fine. But if he's going to cut off a small piece, if he's going to start cutting into the small pieces, then you have a problem of toichin. And continues the Braisa, he's also allowed to roll it around. He's also allowed to roll it around between his hands or between his fingers. And eat it. Now you have a machlokas rishonim over here. What does this moilal accomplish? Is the purpose of this moilal that you have seeds inside these things, inside the siyas of incornus, and moilal accomplishes that by rolling it around among your in between your hands or between your fingers or whatever, it causes the seeds to come out of the pods. In that case, the question is, what about the malacha of dush? Which is the malacha of doing that, of taking things out of their container. So one way of looking at it is then that it would be mutter. Let's continue learning the next two lines, and then we'll talk about. So one basic way that the Rishonim have is we are talking about moilal means you're rolling them between your hands to remove the seeds from the pods. The other major way of explaining it, which I think the Baal Amar says, is that it means you're rolling them between your hands in order to soften them so they're a little so that they're not quite so hard and you can eat them more easily. Anyway, so the Braisa says, you're allowed to do that. Rabbi Yehuda says, but what you would not be allowed to do is that you wouldn't be allowed to do a lot of it with a keli. So in other words, it comes out, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would mean you'd be allowed to do, to roll it around. You'd even be allowed to do with a keli, just not a lot. So v'chamamim moilal barosha etzba'osav v'chamamim moilal barosha etzba'osav v'ochel. V'cham say you have to make a further shinui. You can't just do it. Rabbi Yehuda would say you can't do it with a keli. V'cham was saying that's not enough of a shinui. You have to do it just with your fingertips. V'ochel, and then you can eat. V'vachel yimla b'yaday harbe, as long as you don't roll a lot in your hands together. K'derach shu osav v'chol, which would be the same as you're doing on weekdays. So again, there's a lot of different explanations over here. One way of looking at it is that the moilal we're talking about over here is, again, only in order to soften it. And in that case then, so there's no issue of any actual malacha involved. It's just Rabbi Huda is saying that you can't do it with a keli because that would be the normal way of doing it on weekdays. But he says you could do it with any part of your hand, including the palms of your hands. You could roll it between the palms of your hands. The Chachamim would be saying that even between the palms of your hands is not good enough. You have to do it with your fingertips. But in any case, there's no actual malacha involved. It's just you should do it differently than you do on weekdays. That's all. If we say that moilal means just to roll it in order to crush it and soften it a little bit. If we say, and this is how Rashi says over here, that moilal actually means that you're rolling them between your hands or between your fingers in order to get out the seeds, then again, you have the problem. How is that not the malacha of dush? So there's a few different ways of understanding it. One is that it's mutter because you're doing it only in small quantities, and therefore you're doing it in order to eat right away, and therefore it's part of the normal process of eating. So therefore that can be mutter. Another way is that, in fact, if you were to do it the normal way, it would be an isu daraisa. But because usually when we say something is also daraisa, usually it's also to do it with a darabanan, with a shinui. But over here, one way of understanding it that the poskim say is that you would be allowed to, this is one of those cases where the chachamim will allow you to do it with a shinui, even though if it were done without a shinui, it would be a malacha daraisa, again, because you need it in order to eat it. And another way of looking at it is maybe it's not a malacha daraisa in the first place, especially because doing it with your hands is not the normal way of doing it anyway. And therefore, the Chacham are saying, if you're not doing it with your hands, you're doing it with your fingertips, and you're doing only a small amount at a time, then you're not being over on any isu daraisa or darabana. Okay. Continues the braisa. V'chein ba'amisa, the same rule that we said applies to siyas of incornus, the same rule applies to amisa. which we're going to start defining soon what all these things are. V'chein b'peigam, and the same thing with peigam. V'chein b'shamin etavlin, and the same thing with all other kinds of spices. So, let's start defining them. My amisa is the last part we said was amisa and peigam. So my amisa is ninya, is mint. Peigam, by the way, the Gemara is not going to bother defining, probably because we have peigam in a lot of other places in Shas, and therefore the Gemara doesn't seem to see a need to define it. Rashi translates it by a French word that it's a plant that in English is called rue. It's a plant that's used as a spice sometimes. Okay, what is sia? Amar Rav Yehuda, sia is tzatri. What is tzatri? Rashi gives two possibilities. One from his Rebbe that it's a plant that in English is called savory, and another one is that it's a plant that it's in English is called pennyroyal. We learned about that one a couple of weeks ago. We said over there that it's a plant from the mint family that you would eat it. If a person has worms in their liver, then they would eat this yezer, which over here we're calling sia, and it would help get rid of them. So according to Rashi himself, sia is that same plant. It's called pennyroyal in English. It's a plant in the mint family. Ezev is abouta. Ezev is Azev is hyssop or oregano or some related plant like that. We learned earlier in that same Gemara over there, we had a couple of different definitions of Amoroyim, what Azev is, the Azev that it says in the Torah. We said over there among the other possibilities is that it's oregano. Kurnis is Kurnissa Shema, and what the Braisa calls Kurnis is what we call in Aramaic Kurnissa. So the Gemara says, how could that be? One time there was a person saying, or was announcing, man boy kurnissa, who wants some kurnissa to buy? The ishtaka chashi. And it turned out what he was selling was chashi. What is chashi? So Rashi says chashi is this plant that we just mentioned before called savory. That would be according to Rashi, that previously when we mentioned satri, it was a different plant called pennyroyal. So in that case, chashi would be savory. According to Rashi's Rebbe, who defined the previous one as savory, then Rashi says, I don't know what chashi is, because he didn't explain what it is, but obviously it's some other kind of plant. Anyway. So you can't say that kurnis is kurnissa, because we know it by a different name, chashi. El or no, we have to re-identify. Sia is tzatri, like we said, sia is tzatri, which is either savory or pennyroyal. Ezev is abouta. Ezev is oregano. Kurnissa would be chashi. Kurnissa would be this chashi, would be savory or some other plant that we don't know what it is. Whatever, all those various kinds of plants are things that could, again, they could be dried and used for firewood, and then we're saying they're muktzah on Shabbos. They could be used for animal food, and then they're not muktzah on Shabbos. And they can be used for human food, but then you have rules about what you're allowed to do in terms of breaking off pieces or in terms of rolling them to soften them or to take out the seeds. Okay. Itmar. So we have a discussion of Amoroyim like this. Basa maliach. Meat that was salted. Now, we don't just mean regular salted, like it was salted in order to cook. What we mean is heavily salted, the kind where now it's like beef jerky, and you're able to eat it as is without cooking it. So muta l'taltal b'Shabbos, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos because there's no problem with it. You're able to eat it. What about basar tufel? What about meat that was not salted? Now Rashi and Tosfos both refer over here too. There's a different there's a different girsa over here, not tofel, but rather tafuach. Now tafuach on the face of it means swollen. So it could mean that so on the face of it, basa tafuach, if we have that girsa, would mean swollen meat, meaning in other words where it's starting to spoil and it's swelling up. Or as the Rashba and some other Rishonim say, it might be that it was poisoned, for example, and it swelled up because of that. Rashi though says that basa tafel and basa tafuach is the same thing. So either it means that Rashi is explaining that tafuach over here is just another word for raw meat, for unsalted meat, or it means Rashi would agree that the word tafuach itself does mean spoiled. But he's saying, in terms of the halacha that we're going to talk about over here, there's no real difference. Whether it's raw or whether it's spoiled, either way, the same dinim would apply to it. People can't eat it, but animals can. Anyway, So Rav Huna Amar Mutal Atatlod, Rav Chista Amar Asa Atatlod. So you have machlokes. Rav Huna says you're allowed to move this meat on Shabbos. Again, we're talking either raw meat, or we're talking about spoiled meat. So Rav Huna is saying you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Rav Chista Amar Asa Atatlod. Rav Chista says you're not. Rav Huna Amar. So the question is, what do you mean Rav Huna Amar Mutal Atatlod? How could Rav Huna say that you're, how could you say that it's that, that it's that, and when we say spoiled over here, by the way, we don't necessarily mean, according to the Rishonim, we'll say that it means tafuach, that it means that the girsa over here is supposed to be tafuach, and it does actually mean spoiled, doesn't actually necessarily mean so spoiled that human beings can't eat it. It might just be that it's a little bit spoiled. Anyway, the point is, again, so again, Rashi equates it with raw meat, either because Rashi is considering that tafuach is another word for raw meat, or just Rashi is saying there's no difference in halacha. Either way, you'd have the same machlokes. So the question is, what do you mean Rav Huna Amar Mutal L'Taltaloi? How could Rav Huna be saying you're allowed to move it? V'ho Rav Huna Talmud de Rav Hava. We know that Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav. V'Rav could Rav Yehuda Svirulei de Islei Mukta. And we know that Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, who has a broader conception of mukta than Rav Shimon does, and therefore, so he should say that it's mukta because you didn't plan to eat it before Shabbos, because after all, it's not salted. You can't salt it on Shabbos to prepare it to eat. And the same thing if it's slightly spoiled or whatever, you didn't have in mind before Shabbos that you're going to eat it. So now, of course, to be sure, I mean, the Gemara could have just answered that Rav Huna, fine, is a Talmud of Rav, doesn't necessarily mean he has to agree with his Rebbe, but the Gemara would rather assume, where possible, that a Talmud agrees with his Rebbe. Especially, actually, I saw it pointed out, you have the Gemara mentions elsewhere that sometimes, you have sometimes in the Gemara the expression, Amri Bei Rav such and such. They say in the Yeshiva of Rav, such and such a din. And the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that when it says Amri Bei Rav, that means Rav Huna is saying it. So therefore, like Rav Huna represents the majority opinion in general, he represents the majority opinion of Rav's Beis Medrash, and therefore we would assume that Rav Huna agrees with Rav. And Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who holds of Mukta. The answer is there's a difference between different kinds of mukta. But mukta la'achila sava like Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to things that are mukta to eat, then he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, if you have food that wasn't designated for you to eat before Shabbos, then Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, would say you're not allowed to eat from it on Shabbos. So that's like we said before, for example, about these bundles of spices, for example, that if you didn't plan to eat from them before Shabbos, then Rabbi Yehuda would say they're mukta to you're not allowed to eat from them on Shabbos. But when it comes to mukta of handling things, of moving things, there he would hold like Reb Shimon, who's mekel. So he wouldn't allow you to eat this meat. I mean, you can't eat this meat anyway because it's raw or spoiled, as the case may be. But when it comes to moving it, he's going to hold like Reb Shimon and say that you are in fact allowed to. Now, why would there be that difference? One reason is because it's one thing to one explanation that Mefoshim give is in fact that these are two separate isurim. The concept of muktzah la'achila in fact has a basis in a deraisa. The Gemara talks about in Beitza in the sugya and in the first sugya over there when it talks about Beitza shenol the biyamtiv, about an egg that was laid on yamtiv. Were you not allowed to eat it on yamtiv? And the Gemara mentions over there the concept of achana deraba, the concept of the food you eat on Shabbos has to have been prepared before Shabbos. So therefore, this egg was laid on Shabbos. It wasn't prepared for you to eat before Shabbos. So there we actually have a pasuk that expresses that idea. So whether we say that it's actually d'oraisa or it's just an asmachta, still it's stronger than the issue of tiltul, of moving mukta, which as we said in the previous perek is purely d'rabbanon. It was first instituted, the issue of mukta, of handling certain things on Shabbos was first instituted by Nehemiah at the beginning of the second Mishmikdash. So therefore there would be a reason for Rav to distinguish between eating and moving, where he would say, therefore, that eating is going to be machmer on food to say that it needs to have been pre-designated before Shabbos, but not on moving things, where he's going to say, in this case, you're allowed to move this meat, and he'll hold like Rav Shimon in that. Okay. So that's according to Rav Huna. Rav Chista Amar Asa L'Tatlai. Then we're saying Rav Chista is saying you're not allowed to move this raw or spoiled meat on Shabbos. So the question is, how could that be? Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'ami Ikul Be'er Rav Chista. Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'ami one time visited the house of Rav Chista. V'chazar hu bar'avza d'havakom metaltal ulei meshim shalatula. He saw there was a raw duck that they were moving, that he saw there was a shechted duck that hadn't yet been salted or anything. They were moving it from the sun into the shade. V'amar of Chista, and Rav Chista said, that's fine. Chisorin kis kachazin and hacha. I see there's going to be a loss over here. If we leave it out in the sun, it's going to spoil. Therefore, we're allowed to move it into the shade. Now, we learned before that when it comes to things that are mukta, when it comes to many things that are mukta, you're not allowed to, or in general, things that are mukta, you're not allowed to move them by chamal atzel. You're allowed to move them, we said, certain things that are mukta. You're allowed to move the tzorech gufay, where you need the thing itself, or tzorech mekoymoy, where you need the spot where it was, but not mechamel etzel. This is actually moving at mechamel etzel, and yet Rav Chista is saying it's allowed. So how is that if Rav Chista is saying it's not allowed to do that with raw meat? The answer is shiny bar abza de chozil umza. It's different with a duck because the flesh of it is soft and you could eat it raw as is. When it comes to animal meat, you wouldn't. But when it comes to duck meat, it's soft enough that you could eat it once it was shechted, even if you haven't salted it or anything. And Tosfos points out that therefore, now what about the blood that's in it? Since the blood that's in the Evarim of it didn't move from its place, it's still in the same place where it was when you shechted it, then you're not actually obligated to take it out. You're allowed to eat the meat with that blood inside it. Now, what it is you have to remove any blood that's on the surface, so you would have to rinse it off first. You would also, if there's any place inside it where there's a collection of blood, let's say, for example, one of the blood vessels that still has blood in it, you would have to remove that. But other than that, the blood that's in the capillaries that's distributed throughout the meat over there in the tiny little blood vessels, the capillaries, you would be allowed to eat the meat with that still in it. You don't have to. When do we say you have to salt it? Is only if that blood moved out of its place.
The kaved, probably for sure, you have to get out the kaved.
The kaved, the liver, you're right, is a special case because the liver itself, the Gemara says in Cholin, is considered, in Halacha, it's considered like one big thing of congealed blood. So therefore, yeah, you have to kashu it specially. But we're talking about the rest of the meat.
Is this just for a duck or it's for any animal that this principle applies?
No, so that's what we're saying. We're talking about a duck. We're talking about a duck, or maybe more generally, we're talking about birds. But it wouldn't apply to animals. That's the point. So Rav Chista would say, if it was meat from an animal, then that wouldn't apply because you can't eat it. As far as the din of being allowed to eat it raw without salting it, that does apply to animal meat as well. In fact, you actually have an interesting thing in Menachos where it says over there, what if you have a case? What if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday? Nowadays, in our Kriyas, it can't, but in those times it could. What if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday? Now, you have one of the korbanos of Yom Kippur is a sur lachatas. We just had Parshas Pinchas yesterday. We had all the korbanos from the year, and one of them is we have a sir chata or sir echad lachaper aleichem by Yom Kippur. Like any chatas, it has to be eaten. So if Yom Kippur comes out on any other day, obviously they can't eat it on Yom Kippur itself. But fine, what they can do is matzah Yom Kippur. They can cook it or roast it or whatever and eat it. What do you do if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday? You can't cook it and eat it on Yom Kippur. You can't cook it on Shabbos. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Menachos mentions that the Bavliim, or the Gemara says it's actually people from Alexandria or whatever, would eat it raw. In other words, they didn't want the korban to go to waste. They didn't want it to become noiser. So since anyway they were a tough, uncivilized kind of people, and they didn't mind so much eating meat raw, then they would do that. They would eat meat raw. So they would eat it. Now they were talking about an animal because they were talking about a goat. But Rav Chista is saying that in general, people don't do that. Therefore, regular raw meat, or according to the Girsa, spoiled meat or whatever, you'd be also to move on Shabbos. On the other hand, when it comes to a duck, since it's soft and many people will eat it raw, then you're allowed to. Rav Pashtos, I guess Rav Chista would say, if you have these Bavliim or whatever around who are willing to eat animal meat raw as well, then maybe you would be allowed to move it. I don't know. Okay. Well, it says turn it up on it.
Veal is notoriously a soft meat.
Okay.
So you should be able to do the same.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe this din applies. I mean, maybe the din applies more. I mean, in any case, actually, I'm actually not sure who the halacha is like over here. Usually, I think when you have a machlokas, well, first of all, again, you have the girsa of many of the rishonim is not toffel, so we're not bechlal talking about raw meat over here. According to many of the rishonim, bechlal, the whole discussion was not so much about raw meat, but where it's tefuach, where it's a little bit swelled up, like a little bit spoiled or whatever. And the point would be that you're still able to move it because people may still eat it. So in that case, the discussion wouldn't be about raw meat at all. But what the actual halacha is about raw meat, I didn't have a chance to look up. Okay. Anyway, Tananabonon, Dog Moliach Mutalotaltloy, a salted fish you're allowed to move on Shabbos. Dog Tuffle also the Taltloy, but an unsalted fish you're not allowed to move on Shabbos because you can't use it for anything. Now, why not? On the face of it, you could feed it to animals. So Rashi explains because you didn't have in mind to give it to the dogs before Shabbos. In other words, it comes out according to what Rashi is saying that if you didn't have in mind that this is something that you could conceivably feed your animals before Shabbos, then in fact it would be mukta. So in the case of meat, if you have animals, you have dogs or other kinds of animals or whatever, you always have in mind you're gonna be feeding them meat sometime during Shabbos, but you don't usually feed them fish, therefore it would be osur. Tosfos gives a couple of other possibilities. One is that an unsalted fish is not even suitable for dogs, even dogs won't eat it. Or another possibility is we're talking over here according to Rabbi Yehuda, because since it's usable as food for human beings, then therefore you're not going to set it aside. You're not going to instead repurpose it for dogs. Then, meanwhile, when it comes to raw meat, fine. We would say Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to move it, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, because after all, even if domestic animals won't eat it, but wild animals, if you have wild animals, then they will eat it. So therefore, it can't be considered completely off limits, as opposed to a raw fish. According to that second answer in Tosfos, a raw fish is not something that similar to what Rashi is saying, because it's suitable for people to eat, therefore you would never set it aside for animals in the first place. Again, according to Tosfos's first explanation, it's just practically speaking, even dogs or other animals like that won't eat raw fish. Okay. Continues the Braisa, basa ben tofel ben maliach mutal tatli, meat you're allowed to move on Shabbos, whether it's raw or whether it's salted, or stomach. Reb Shimon, so you have a stam Braisa like Reb Shimon. Marshall takes out those lines, and in fact, according to Tosfos, it's Tosfos, whose second answer says that the Braisa is according to Reb Yehuda, obviously didn't have that in their Girsa. So okay, there you go then. So the halacha is you are allowed to move raw meat on Shabbos, because you could feed it to an animal. So to answer your question about the veal then, so okay, if it's something that people conceivably could eat, fine, all the better that people could eat it. But the point is, even if not, it's something that you could feed animals, and therefore it's not mukta. But fish not. Okay. Tananabonon, metaltal and asatzomis, you're allowed to move on Shabbos bones, mepnesho michal aklovin, because they're food for dogs. Obviously, we're talking about the kind of bones that dogs will eat. So we're not talking about, let's say, chicken bones, we're talking about beef bones or whatever. Basa tefuach, you're allowed to move basa tefuach. Again, Rashi explains over here, like before, that tefuach means that it's smelly, that it smells bad. Tosfos says that it doesn't mean that it smells bad. It just means it's a little bit swollen, but it's still edible. But it's still edible by people. So mepneisho machal lachaya. So it is. You're allowed to move it on Shabbos because it could be food for wild animals. Mayim Megulin, you're allowed to move on Shabbos water that was uncovered, where we have throughout Shas the concern that a snake might have drunk from it. It's poisoned, and therefore you can't drink from it, and even an animal can't drink from it, because it's suitable for a cat. Cats, Rashi explains, are immune to snake venom. Cats, in fact, eat snakes. So therefore, they're immune to the venom. So a cat could drink this water. But Reb Shimon Gamliel Lomer Kol Atzmon also the Shahosim from Nesakana. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, never mind that. You're not allowed to keep around such water in order to give to a cat because of the sakana, because a person might drink from it. So according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, in other words, it would sound like it probably is mukta because you weren't allowed to keep it around in the first place. But according to the Chachamim, you would be allowed to. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of mukta and on the topic of doing things for animals on Shabbos, you're allowed to overturn a basket for chicks that need to go in and out of their nest, so they can use the basket to get up and down out of their nest. Now, we learned We learned earlier in the Masechta, Machlokas, on this topic. Now, the chicks themselves are mukta, because there's nothing you can do with them on Shabbos. So are you allowed to use, are you allowed to move a keli for the sake of something which is mukta? So we had a Machlokas earlier in the Masechta. We had Rabbi Yitzchak said no. He would understand our Mishnah that it's talking about that you already picked up the basket for some other purpose. And now, once you have it in your hand, you're allowed to put it down for the chicks. But according to him, you wouldn't be allowed to pick it up in the first place for that purpose. The halacha is not like him, though, so the halacha is that you could. Now, what about now the Gemara is going to take up the problem that you have something called Mevato Klima Hechone, which we also talked about over there. In that sugya, that you have a din, you're not allowed to make it that a keli becomes mukta on Shabbos. That like you're mevato klima hechone, you're being mevatel it, that now it's no longer usable where it was usable before. Different Rishonim talk about different reasons why that might be. Either it's like a malacha of boine, because like it's as if like you're attaching it in place, because now for the rest of Shabbos you can't move it. Or the other way around, because it's like soiser, it's like you're destroying it, you're making that now it's not usable for the rest of Shabbos. Or because it's not covered Shabbos, or whatever the point is. On the other hand, here with the chicks, there's not an issue, because they don't stay on it for any length of time. They run up it, they run down it. Anytime you want, you could easily pick it up or then frighten them off or whatever. And therefore, so therefore, it's not Mavato Klimei Chone, because there's going to be many times yet during Shabbos when you're going to be able to pick up this basket without picking up any of the chicks. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Tanegolas Shabarcha, if a chicken ran away from home, you're allowed to push it to force it back into the house. Now, what you're not allowed to do is the Mishnah is going to describe now another thing. Medadin agolon usiyachim, and you have another girsa on the side of it here. You're allowed to help young calves or young horses walk in the street, which means that Rashi describes you hold on to the animal's neck or to its sides and you help it walk. It's still too young an animal to be able to walk without being helped. So you help it by holding on to it. As we're going to see in the Gemara, you're allowed to do that. And the reason is basically because of Tzar Bal Chaim. Because the reason is because the animal needs to get out, it needs to walk, and therefore, so even though normally you wouldn't be allowed to handle an animal at all, even to handle parts of it, like the neck or the legs or whatever, but here it's allowed because of Tzar Bal Chaim. Now, on the other hand, though, with the chicken, we did not say that you're allowed to do that, and the Gemara is going to explain why. Why is it with the chicken, you can only push it from behind, whereas with the agolim usiyachim, you're allowed to actually help them walk by holding on to their neck or their flanks or whatever. We'll see in the Gemara why. Continues the Mishnah, Isha Medada Esbna, a woman is also allowed to do the same thing for her son in Rosh Hashanah, help him walk by holding on, so she holds on to his arms, and he moves his feet and walks. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Emesai, Rabbi Yehuda says, but when does that apply? Only if the child is old enough or willing enough that he's actually picking up one foot and putting down the other foot. In other words, actually, the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch, what it means is basically the kid is always standing on one foot. So therefore, there's no time when you're actually carrying him. Avalim hoya gorer, but if he was dragging his feet, then it would be also, because then, in effect, she's carrying him. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab. Behema shenofla la'amas amayim, if an animal falls into a water canal, maybe koromuksosis maniach tachtel. You're allowed to bring pillows and cushions and put them underneath her and shove them in underneath the animal. Vim also, and if then she's able to get out, if then the animal is able to get out of the canal, then good, it gets out and then it's safe. If not, then you'll get it. In other words, the point is you can't pick up the animal and take it out of there on Shabbos because the animal is mukta, but you're allowed to do this. There are poskim who say that maybe if there's no other way to get out the animal other than that, maybe you would be even allowed to pick it up and take it out on the grounds of Tzar Bal Chaim, but many other poskim disagree with that. The Alter Rebbe, for example, doesn't even bring that concept in Shulchan Aruch. He just says flat out, you're not allowed to move animals, you're not allowed to pick up animals at all. So the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Behema Shenofla La'amas Amayim, if an animal falls into a canal, you're allowed to throw down food to it in there so it doesn't die. So it doesn't die of hunger, so it has what to eat. Implying parnosa ein karamuksosis loy. So you're allowed to throw down food to it, but you're not allowed to throw down pillows and cushions. So what is it? The answer is like kasha, hodi efshir b'parnasa, hodi efshir b'parnasa. It depends. Are you able to keep the animal alive just by sending down food? Is it, for example, a very shallow canal where the food is going to stay there and the animal will be able to eat it and it's not going to drown in the canal? Then fine, you just send down food. If it's not possible, if parnasa is not going to be good enough, if the animal is going to die there because it's not going to be able to get to the food or because the water is too deep and it's going to drown or whatever, then you're allowed. So the Gemara teaches out. If parnasa is enough, if the situation is where all you need to do is send it down food and then it can stay down in the canal the rest of Shabbos, and you'll schlep it out of there after Shabbos, then good, do that. The Eloi, and if not, maybe Korim Uksasis Maniach Tachter. If not, then you're allowed to take pillows and cushions and put them down and shove them under the animal in order to help it get out. Okay, the Gemara asks, how can you do that? By putting down the pillows or cushions, aren't you doing what we just said before, Mavato Klima Hechonoi? Now you're making that these pillows and cushions can't be moved anymore. Now, why can't they be moved? Two possibilities that Rishonim talk about. One of them is that because now they're under the animal, and they're not necessarily. Now, it could be the animal is going to be able to climb up on top of them and be able to get out, but not necessarily. It may not. It just may end up sitting on them the rest of Shabbos, either because it's too deep and it can't get out, or just because it doesn't feel like getting out or whatever. And then it is mevato klima hechonei, because once they're under the animal, you can't pull them out. The other reason that Rambam says is because we're talking about a water canal over here. So therefore, when you throw pillows and things into it, they become wet. And once they become wet, you're not going to be able to move them on Shabbos because you're going to be squeezing water out of them. So the question is, how are you allowed to do that? We just said you're not allowed to be mevato klima hechon, right? The answer is, sovar, because Rav takes the view like this. Mevato klima hechon is only dirabanan. That issur of being mevato klima hechon, making that a keli is mukta and you can't handle it anymore, is only dirabanan. Now, you actually have a machloikas in several places in Shas, most notably in Elo Metzias, whether the concept of tzar balachayim is daraisa or darabanan. So you have a sugya about it near the end of Elo Metzias. So Rav holds, according to the opinion, that tzar balachayim is daraisa. Therefore, v'asi daraisa v'dach darabanan. So he says, therefore, the daraisa of tzar balachayim overrides the darabanan of mevato klima hechonai. Where is the source of tzar balachayim daraisa? So there's a couple of different explanations. One of them is from that sugya in Bava Metzias. Since the Torah tells us oziv tazav imo, that if you see an animal that's collapsing under its burden, then you have to help unload it. So that shows tzar balachayim daraisa. So that's one way of looking at it. There's a couple of other explanations, including the Rambam gives an interesting one in Morin Nevuchim. You have in Parshas Balak. Now, usually, you know, we think of Parshas Balak as one of those parshias. There's no mitzvahs in it. The whole thing is a story. But actually, the Rambam in Morin Nevuchim says that from the story in Balak over there, when Bilam is beating his donkey, and the Malach tells him, Al mohi kisa sasoncha, why did you hit your donkey? So the Rambam says in Morin Nevuchim, from there, we learn the concept of tzar balachayim. Anyway, whatever it is, the point is that Rav holds, according to the opinion, that tzar balachayim is daraisa, and therefore that overrides mevato klima hechana. So again, when it comes to the chicks in our Mishnah, there's no issue at all, because those move around all the time, and there's no significant amount of time that they're on there, so it's not mevato klima hechana. You're easily able to scare them off if you want to pick up the basket, as opposed to with the animal, it would be mevato klima hechana, again, either because it's under the animal or because they got wet, but we're allowing it on the grounds of tzar balachayim. We said in the Mishnah, Tanugolas Shaborchachola, we said that if a chicken runs away from home, then you're allowed to push it back in, but not help it walk, as opposed to various kinds of animals. We said baby animals, you're allowed to help them walk. So what's the difference? Doichin ein medadin loy. So with the chicken, we're saying you're only allowed to push it, you're not allowed to help it walk. So in that way, we're learning briefly in the Mishnah what we learn in more detail in a Braisa. And one thing that means, it means that Braisa is reliable and we can accept it by halacha. The Braisa says, the Tanarabonon, midadin behema chaya ba'oif b'chotzer, you're allowed to help a behema chaya or a behema chaya or oif walk in the chotzer, again, by holding on to its neck or holding on to its flanks or whatever and helping it walk. But not in Rishus Rabim. A woman is allowed to help her son walk, again, like we said in the Mishnah, by holding on to his arms, and then he himself picks up and puts down his feet. You're allowed to do that. Needless to say, you're allowed to do that in the Chotzer, which is a Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so that's one Braisa. I skipped a couple of lines. I'm sorry. The Tanarabon, Medadin Behemo Chayvoy Pachotzer, Avaloyas Atanagoylas. But the Braisa is saying you're allowed to help a behema chayav oif walk in the chotzer, but not a chicken. So we see that there is in fact a difference between other animals and a chicken. So tanagolos actually means a hen, so a female chicken. So tanagolos my time aloy, what's the difference? Why can't you help the hen walk? Amar Abaye mishum de mekapya nafsha. So Abaye says because the chicken, the hen, mekapya herself. What is mekapya? Rashi explains mekapya means that when you try to help it walk, it'll pick itself up from the ground. It'll pick up its legs. So therefore, it comes out that you're carrying it. So you have a problem. So you have a problem of mukta.
But it only picks up one leg at a time. It won't pick up two.
Not necessarily. No, that's the point. In other words, a hen is prone to do that. Think of like when you do kaparis, like the chicken tries to pick up its legs and because it's like it's trying to fly away. So therefore, there's going to be the problem that therefore that you're carrying it. So Rashi explains it's not really so much. As opposed to Rashi says other kinds of birds. Let's say for example geese. If you hold on to their wings, they continue walking with their feet. They're not prone to try and pick up their feet off the ground like that. So Rashi says, in Rishus Rabim, you would not be allowed to do it, because then even with other kind of animals, it might end up that you're carrying them. You're not allowed to. A chicken, definitely not. But we're saying even a chicken, not in the chotzer, because then you'd have a problem of mukta. As far as the child in Rishus Rabim, that would be allowed, Rashi says, because even if the child does end up picking up his feet and not willing to walk, even if it does happen that she carries him, it's not that big a problem because Chai Noisei Satsme. We said a living creature, and we said that Abban and Hold, it means only human beings. Reb Nosson had said there it means animals as well. The halacha is like the Chachamim, but people, Chai Noisei Satsme, a person carries themselves, a person carries their own weight. They make themselves lighter or whatever, and therefore, so even if she did end up carrying him, it wouldn't be also. Therefore, she's allowed to do it in Rishus Rabim. Not that you should do it l'chatchila, because after all, it is also d'rabbanan. But to carry the child in Rishus Rabim l'chatchila. In other words, you can't do that. But b'di'evit, if she's trying to help him walk, and at one point he picks up both legs, then it's not. She wasn't over on an isur d'oraisa. Okay. Now that's Rashi's explanation of the Mekapya Nafsha. The Rambam has exactly the opposite explanation. Mekapya means that the chicken is going to dig its legs into the ground when you're trying to pick it up. And therefore what's gonna happen is you may tear feathers off it. And tearing off feathers of it would be a tool of the Malacha of Gozes. Okay. So that's why with a chicken the maximum you can do is to push it. Because that way, there's no problem when you're pushing it that it's going to lift up its legs and therefore that you're carrying it. There's no problem, according to the Rambam, that it's going to try to pull itself away from you and you're going to end up pulling out feathers. So therefore, that would be allowed. But with any other animal where you don't have those concerns, then you're allowed to actually be medaja to help them walk. Okay. So the Gemara says Toni Chod. Now we have a couple of braises. One braise says, "Midadin behem achayv oifachotzer avaloy b'shus rabim." One braise says that you're allowed to help behem achaya and oif walk in a chotzer avaloy b'shus rabim, but not in b'shus rabim again because you might end up carrying them. Or isha midadas b'nav b'shus rabim ve'en tzorchlem b'chotzer. A woman is allowed to help her child walk in b'shus rabim, needless to say in a chotzer. That's one braise. B'tanya idach ein oikrin behem achayv oifachotzer. Another braise says you're not allowed to pick up a behema chaya and oif in the chotzer, fine, because they're mukta. Avol doichin behen shiyikotzu, but you're allowed to push them so that they should go back in to wherever they're supposed to be. So before we get to the contradiction of the braises, we have to figure out how gufa kasha. You have a contradiction in the second braise itself. Amrit ein oikrin, you're saying you're not allowed to pick up the animal. Avol daduye midadinan, implying but you are allowed to help it walk, where you're not fully picking up the animal, you're only holding on to its neck or its flanks or whatever. Hader amrit doichin ein midadin loy, and then you're saying you're only allowed to push it. You're not allowed to. You're only allowed to push it. You're not even allowed to help it walk. Amar Abaya Seifa Asar Matana Golas. So Abaya says, you're right. The Seifa of that Braisa, where it says you're only allowed to push it, is talking about a hen. So the Reisha of that Braisa is saying about other kinds of animals. You're not allowed to pick any animals up. You're not allowed to pick up any animals, but you are allowed to help them walk, with the exception of a chicken. The first Braisa had said then basically the same thing, that you're allowed to do it in a chotzer, but not in Rosh Hashanah. Okay, Tosfos mentions a couple of different gears. So it's over here, okay. Anyway. Amar Abaya. So Abaya says, by the way, here's another din related to what we said about that a chicken, that a hen, we said has this characteristic where it tries to pull itself away, it tries to pull up its legs, or it tries to push down its legs according to the different understandings. So here's a thing that's relevant to the halachas of Shechita. Hai man de shochet tanagolos, if a person is shechting a chicken on Yom Tov, or not just on Yom Tov, actually, anytime. If a person is shechting a chicken, he should make sure to press the legs of it onto the ground firmly. Or he should pick them up so it's nowhere near the ground and therefore it can't stick its toes into the ground. Because if you're very close to the ground, otherwise the chicken may dig its nails into the ground and then its claws, whatever, into the ground. And then it'll pull the simonim out of place, and then when you shecht it, it's going to be an akura, which is one of the five things that passes shechita. So you have to make sure that the chicken is not able to do that, so you either have to hold it high above the ground, or you have to press its legs hard against the ground so it doesn't have the ability to pull away and do this ikur simonim. The Rashba actually says, even though we're saying in the Gemara over here, Tarnagolas, he says actually it's referring to a Tarnagol, a male chicken, because according to Rashi's understanding of Makapya Nafsha, it's the other way around. A hen, a female chicken, will try to pull its legs off the ground, not push them into it. A male chicken, a rooster, will try to push its legs in. According to the Rambam, it could be either one, because according to the Rambam's definition of Makapya Nafsha, that it digs its nails into the ground, and you might end up pulling out feathers, and that's why you're not allowed to on Shabbos. Then that means in the case of Shechita, you have this problem of ikur would apply equally well whether it's a male or a female.
So you're allowed to shecht the chicken on Shabbos?
No. The last part that we said over here about shechting is any other time other than Shabbos. This concept of ikur simonim applies any time you're shechting. There are five basic things you need to be careful of in Shechita, and one of them is ikur, that the simonim are not torn out of place. Like the simonim are supposed to be embedded in the muscles of the neck. But you can have, if the animal is pulling hard or pushing hard, then it may tear them out of place. So in the case of a chicken, it has that particular propensity to do that. Therefore, you have to be careful with that more than with other creatures.
So if you lift a chicken or you shechting it, then you don't have this problem.
So that's the thing. That's Abaya saying. Either what you do is you press its feet firmly against the ground so that it's not able to dig them any further in, or you hold it up in the air, which, for example, when we do kaparis, that's the chashash shechet, holds the chicken in the air. And that works, yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, "Ein miyaldanus habehema biyomtiv." You're not allowed to help an animal give birth on yomtiv. Avo masadin, but you're allowed to assist. We're going to see in the Gemara what masadin means. So miyaldin would mean like to actually pull the baby out of the womb. Masadin would be to just help at the birth, and we'll see in the Gemara what exactly the helping is. The point is, now on Yom Tov, Bepashas, we mean all the more so on Shabbos. And now Rashi says the reason is because of Tircha Yesera, because it's again like other things that we had in our Perek. It's more Tircha than the Chachamim want you to be doing on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. A different way. Some of the Rishonim explain that actually it would be Malacha Daraisa, Malacha Masakin, or something. Anyway. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to a woman giving birth on Shabbos, a Jewish woman, you are allowed to help her give birth on Shabbos, and even on Shabbos, needless to say, on Yom Tov, because b'kuach nefesh, you can call for her a midwife from one place to another, meaning even from outside the tchum. You're allowed to be mechallel Shabbos for the sake of this woman who's giving birth. We'll see in the Gemara what other kinds of chillul Shabbos we're talking about. And after the baby is born, you're allowed to tie up the umbilical cord. Rabbi Yossi says not only tie it up, you're allowed to cut it off. The Tanakhama is saying you can only tie it up, meaning you leave it tied to the placenta till after Shabbos, and then after Shabbos you cut it off. Rabbi Yossi is saying that no, you're actually allowed You actually have to cut it off on Shabbos. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, so that's how we have it. That's how we have it done nowadays, is that when the baby is born, the umbilical cord is cut off even on Shabbos. Also, you're allowed to do all the necessities of milah on Shabbos, which the next perek, which we're going to start 2 days from now, Be'ez Hashem, the next perek is going to talk all about the dinim of milah in general and milah on Shabbos in particular.
The umbilical cord, they cut these days right away, or they tie it for a few days till it dries out?
No, they cut it right away. They cut it right away, and then they apply a clip or something to it so it stays closed and so it gradually dries up. Whatever, yeah.
And before we learn about Tabal Chaim here for a chicken and it's giving birth or whatever it is, all of a sudden we don't apply Tabal Chaim.
So that's the thing. So Tzah Bala Chaim means you're allowed to be masajin, you're allowed to help with the birth, as the Gemara is going to say, but you're not allowed to actually birth the animal to pull the baby out of the womb.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, Ketzed masajin, what do we mean by masajin? What does it mean to help at the birth? Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a oichas zavlad shalai yipalad. Rabbi Yehuda says it means you hold on to the baby so it doesn't, you just hold the baby so it doesn't fall to the ground. You hold out your hands so that when the baby comes out of the mother animal's womb, it doesn't fall on the ground. Rab Nachman says it means something else. Doichik babasa kadesh yetze avlad. Means you're allowed to push on the flesh. You push in other areas near the womb, and that way the baby comes out. Like you're putting pressure in other places, and that way it makes that the baby is going to come out more easily. Tanya Kabasei de Rabbi Yehuda, we learn a braisa like what Rabbi Yehuda says. Kate said masadin. What does it mean that masadin? What does it mean that you assist at the birth of an animal? Uichzinis avlad shalai yipol la'aretz. You hold on to the baby so it doesn't fall onto the ground. Also, after it's born, you breathe into its nostrils like giving it CPR. But the point is, in other words, because you have, but when the baby is born, you have mucus and whatever in its nostrils, so you blow into them to clear that away so it can start breathing. And you put the mother's nipple from its udder into the baby's mouth so it can start nursing. So those things you're allowed to do on Shabbos. Actually, the truth is, it's not so simple that you can do them on Shabbos. The Mishnah had said, "Ein miyaldas abehema biyomtiv ava masadin." So, does that imply that on Shabbos you can't even do masadin, or does it mean the Mishnah is mentioning yomtiv, but it does in fact mean Shabbos as well? It's machlokas aposkim on that. Amr of Shimon Gamliel, Merachman, Hoyinu, Abahema, Tahor, to be Yomtiv. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, here's another thing that you're allowed to do on Yomtiv. We would make that the mother animal is going to have Rachmanos and love her baby. What does that mean? Hechi Ovid, how do you do? What do you do for that? Amr Abaya, maybe Bol Shel Melach. You take a chunk of salt. What happens is like this. Sometimes you have a mother animal after the baby is born. She doesn't want to have anything to do with this baby for whatever reason. Maybe she doesn't recognize it. Because she can't smell it or whatever. So you need to do something to make her have Rachmanos and realize that this is her baby. So she should have Rachmanos and take it back. So what do? So you put a chunk of salt into umaniach labasecha rechem and put it inside the animal's womb, into the mother's animal womb. Kadesha tidzko tzaira, that's where she remembers the pain of the birth, or tirachem olav, and then she'll have rachmanos on the baby. And also, umazalfen mei shulya agave vlad, also you take the shulya, you take the placenta, and soak it in water, and you take that water and sprinkle it on the baby. Kadesha tariach reichai, so that the mother will smell the smell of it, or tirachem olav, and then she'll also have rachmanos on it and accept it as her baby and start nursing it. However, the Gemara says, v'davka tahora, this din applies only to a tahor animal. Abel tmei aloi, but it does not apply if it's a non-kosher animal. My time, why not? Tmei aloi merach gavalda, because a non-kosher mother animal in the first place is not going to be merachik, is not going to reject her child. The imerach gavalda loy makarva. But if she does, then these methods of using the salt and using the extract of the shulya or whatever are not going to help. If she's not prone to a mother non-kosher animal is not prone to rejecting her baby. But once she does, she's never going to accept it again, even if you do these methods. And therefore, it's useless to do it on Shabbos, and therefore it's tircha without a purpose.
So basically, there's a difference if it's a bird that's tahir or not. How they behave.
Well, so birds we're not talking about. Birds lay eggs anyway, so there's no issue of merachim and alavlad.
Chicken, talking about chicken, right? Chicken.
No, we're not. We're talking about kosher versus non-kosher animals. So, for example, sheep and goats versus, let's say, horses.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a sheep. So if you have a mother sheep or a mother goat has rejected her baby, or a mother cow, whatever, has rejected her baby, then you do these methods. You use the salt and you use the meshulia, and that causes her to love the baby and accept it. But if you have, for example, a horse gave birth and it's not accepting its baby, then there's nothing you can do, because even whatever you do is not going to help anyway. So therefore, you can't do that on Shabbos. Okay. Well, do we have time? Do we have time for a little more? Are you in shul already? Okay. I guess if you have a few more minutes before the minyan starts, then we'll continue over here. The Mishnah had said, you're allowed to help a woman give birth on Shabbos. By the way, in principle, this din applies only to a Jewish woman. In principle, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, you would not be allowed to assist at a Goyish woman's birth on Shabbos, and you could even use the excuse that, look, we're only allowed to be Mechallel Shabbos for people who keep Shabbos. Nowadays, though, that wouldn't really fly. That excuse wouldn't really fly, and the poskim nowadays say that if you're a nurse or a midwife or whatever in a hospital, then you, or a doctor or whatever, then you are allowed to assist at any birth on Shabbos, Jew or Goy, because otherwise you have a major problem of Ava. It's going to cause a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism if we try to discriminate like that. Anyway, so the Mishnah had said, Miyaldana Seishavahola. We said you're allowed to help a woman give birth on Shabbos, which means there it means to actually help at the birth, to actually pull the baby out of the womb. So Mechti Tonale Miyaldana Seishavakurin Lachachamim Makamamakam. We already said in the Mishnah you can help her give birth. We already said you can call a midwife from one place to another, meaning even from outside the tchum. So Mechalan Asaleas Shabbos, Lasu Yamai. So what is the Mishnah adding with the words Mechalan Aleas Shabbos? Obviously, we know already then that you can be Mechal Shabbos for her. So what does that come to include? The answer is Lasu Yahod Tanan Abonin. Comes to include this that we learn in a Braisa, Imahoyset Sricha Laner. If the woman who's giving birth needs light, she needs a candle to be lit. Then another woman there is allowed to light a candle for her on Shabbos. And if she needs oil, let's say to rub on her skin or whatever as part of the birthing process, then her friend can bring her oil in her hand, meaning because she's carrying it, but so even though we're allowed to do it, we have to do as much of a shinui as possible. So therefore, ideally, she should bring it in her hand, which is not the normal way to carry it, and that way there's less of a chilul Shabbos. The im ain't a sipik b'yad. If her hands are not large enough to bring the necessary amount of oil, mevia b'sayra, then she can bring the oil in her hair, which we'll see soon what the Gemara means by that. Does it mean, we'll see soon, two possibilities, what it means to bring the oil in her hair. If it's not enough to bring in her hair, then she can bring it in a keli the regular way. Because the idea is you have to make as much of a shinui as possible. You have some Rishonim learn that this is specifically when it comes to a woman giving birth. Because even though it's true that giving birth is considered pikuach nefesh, and that's why you're allowed, that's why we bend various halachas for it. Nevertheless, they say, I think Maharam Rutenberg says this, the fact is, look, birth is a normal process. You know, hundreds of thousands of women give birth every year. So therefore you can't say it's so much pikuach nefesh that you should be allowed to do things without a shinui. As much as possible, if you can do things with a shinui, then you do that. If you can't, if you can't do it without a shinui, you do it the normal way. As opposed to, he would say, when it comes to other kinds of sick people, there you're allowed to do it without a shinui to begin with. Other poskim, other rishonim disagree with that and say that no, even with other kinds of cholim, if you're able to do with a shinui and it's not going to affect the treatment, it's not going to affect the speed of it or the effectiveness or whatever, then you should do things with a shinui. Okay. So we said in the braise, im hoisat tzricha l'ner, chavata madlekas z'ner, if she needs a lamp to be lit, then her friend is allowed to light a lamp for her. So the question is, pshita, obviously, that's like any other thing that we said that you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos for. The answer is, lo tzricha besuma. Yes, but the chidush is, even if the woman is blind, so you're going to say she can't see anyway, so it should be also. What good is the light going to do for her? Nevertheless, lighting a lamp in the room will help calm her down and make her feel better, which is important. Savra, because she figures that once there's light in the room, if there's any kind of problem, then my friend will see with the light and be able to do something for me, as opposed to if there's no light. The Magen Avraham asks a kind of funny question. He says, if she's blind anyway, so we'll tell her we lit a light. We didn't actually light one, and that way we're not Mechal Shabbos. Won't that also calm her down? He says she's still going to know the difference. She can still tell whether it's burning or not. Or she might even, for example, she might even hold up fingers for them and ask them, how many fingers am I holding up? And then if there's no light, then they're not going to pass the test. So therefore, she's going to know if they're trying to trick her by saying we lit a light when in fact they didn't. We said im hoisat tzricha l'shemen b'chola. We said that if she needs oil, then l'chatchila you bring it in the hand. If not, then you bring it in her hair. So what do you mean? What does it accomplish by bringing it in her hair? The Gemara is assuming that bringing it in her hair means the other woman pours the oil into her hair, and then when she gets to where the woman who's giving birth is, then she squeezes out the oil from her hair. So how does that help? Typically, mishum schita. What have you accomplished by that? You're still doing the malacha of schita. So you've taken away one malacha of haitzah, but you're bringing in another malacha instead of schita. What good does that do? Rabbah for Rabbi Yosef, the Amitabayu ain't schita b'seir. So Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef both say that the issue of schita does not apply to hair because the hair doesn't actually absorb the oil. It sort of just it coats the outside of it. Rav Ashi Yomah Afilu Temi Yesh Schita B'Seir. Rav Ashi says you don't really need that. Maybe this concept of schita does apply to hair. But what we mean is, Mevi'ala B'Kli Derech Saira, what we mean when we say she brings it in her hair, doesn't mean she pours the oil into her hair. It means that she takes the keli full of oil and wraps it in her hair, so she's carrying it using her hair. And because at least as much as possible as we can make a shinui, we should make a shinui. So therefore, if she's able to carry the keli, by wrapping it in her hair, then she should do that. And if not, if that can't be done either, then she can carry it normally. Okay. So we're going to continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with these various dinim about a woman giving birth and various other cases involving pikuach nefesh, what you're allowed and not allowed to do on Shabbos.
Thank you very much. Safe travel.
Shkoyach, thank you.
Thank you.